हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
Sukadeva Goswami continued. Flashing with lightning, great clouds were shaken and swept about by fierce winds. Just like merciful persons, the clouds gave their lives for the pleasure of this world. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. During the rainy season, there are strong winds blustering all over the country and carrying clouds from one place to another to distribute life-giving water to the needy living entities. Water is urgently needed after the summer season, and thus the clouds are just like a rich man who, in times of need, distributes his money even to the point of exhausting his whole treasury. So the clouds exhaust themselves by distributing water all over the surface of the globe. When Maharaj Dasara, the father of Lord Ramachandra, used to fight with his enemies, it was said that he approached them just like a farmer uprooting unnecessary plants and trees. Right, because when you approach that, you're very determined. Those plants are coming out. It's not a question of whether the weeds come out or not. The weeds are coming out. Right? So like that he approached them. And when there was a need of giving charity, he used to distribute money exactly as the clouds distribute rain. The distribution of rain by clouds is so sumptuous that it is compared to the distribution of wealth by a great munificent person. The clouds' downpour is so profuse that the rains even fall on rocks and hills and on the oceans and seas, where there is no need for water. It is like a charitable person who opens his treasury for distribution and who does not discriminate whether the charity is needed or not. He gives in charity open-handedly. Right? It's to qualified people, but whether they need it or not, just like does the Brahmin need 10,000 cows? There's a good chance he doesn't, but still 10,000 are given. Right? And then he'll keep what he needs, he'll give the rest in charity, like that. So that's the whole point, is that in situations of need, then it's just given very nicely. So like that. So the government, then they're giving back in the way of their taxes there, then here, then talking about the clouds themselves, because the first one is about the sun, right? Sun draws the taxes and then gives everything back. So here, then wealthy persons, just like the clouds, they have so much, then in times of need, then they're distributing. So that's the whole idea, is whatever can be done, right? So the greatest then of we see of welfare is the preaching activities, right? So those preaching activities are done until we can't do them anymore. That's the basic principle.
Maharaj?
Yes?
You've seen that in Bhagavatam. Whatever is unnecessary, you know, it has not been discussed. Usually the acharyas say that it is not necessary, so it has not been discussed.
Yeah.
But then we find over here that in this particular chapter we have this discussion about the rainy season.
About the rainy season.
Layman knows about, you know, what's going on, you know, with the clouds and.
But does he know?
Who?
No, I'm saying, yeah, who knows about this?
Everybody knows about it.
But everybody knows about how to give charity in a munificent way, or how to collect taxes and give them out to everybody like that.
That is not known.
Yes, so that's what it's talking about, no?
Yeah.
See, it's like this. Where are we going into next? We're having problems just digesting that Mother Jashoda is freaking out when Krishna's with Kaliya. Right? Mm. We're thinking, how is it that Braj is supposed to be the top place and we see that there's anxiety there, because in my mind there's no anxiety. In other words, for me, perfection is floating around as a particle of white light within the white light within Mahakalapura.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So, And so we're not digesting this. What does that mean? There's still mundane concepts of how to behave and this and that, all these kind of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now, if we're freaking out with Mother Yashoda, then how much are we going to freak out when we get to the gopis?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So therefore, this chapter is here to remove all the freak out. Does that make sense? Because when we say that everybody knows this, but everybody knows so many things, but how many people do what they know? So therefore, the Brajabasis, is it just a matter of knowledge, or is that a matter of realization? Right? So realization is more important. We say we have this knowledge, but do we have the realization? Because what's being emphasized here? That one should give charity, or the mood in which it's given? Yes, and the sun is soaking up the taxes and giving back. It's about the mood.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, what are we not catching with the Brajabasis? The mood. So we're dealing with the mood here. And that these are the forms that culturally will be used, that if we say, no, but we've already heard this before, why are we hearing it again? That must mean it's important.
It's important.
Yes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing, is that this mood, that charitable mood, that we're willing to give everything, because if we can give everything here, why, then we can move forward to give everything for Krishna. Because the point is, the Brajabasis, everything's been given. Everything's for Krishna. No matter whatever they collect, it's for Krishna. Whatever they want to distribute anything is done to please Krishna. So it's the same principle. So unless we have these kind of things, if it's about Krishna, then what do we care?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Let us say, mother's with the baby, baby's been having some trouble sleeping, and then finally it falls asleep when you weren't exactly expecting it to fall asleep, sitting on your lap. Okay? Now, what do you do?
You're stuck.
Huh? You do nothing. You just sit there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is it's that mood that we're willing to go through difficulty for Krishna. Right? So the Brajabasis, so do we see it as difficulty? Not necessarily. If we do, we need a little work. You understand? But here is the Brajabasis don't see any of this as difficulty. Why? Because of their affection. Why is it they can hear all these amazing things and it not distract their relationship because of their affection? Does that make sense? You know.
And our regular understanding of the affection is that one freaks out. It happens. Bad, especially to the person you love.
That's there, that consideration. But you don't have a problem that you're supposed to freak out. No. But when we were talking about Krishna's and the coils of Kaliya and Mother Yashoda and everyone's there fainting and this and that, then questions were coming up. Why does Krishna allow this? Why does he give so much trouble? You understand? So that's the whole point, is we have to come down to it's about rasa. It's not about controlling the situation, because we'll look at it, okay, so even we take that, but why did Krishna allow the situation to be such that these things happen? Because he being God could make it so the situation doesn't come up like that. So where is our anxiety? Our anxiety is about the situation. Right? Because that's what makes the material consciousness. It's all about the situational, rather than about the love for Krishna. So even if we're involved in devotional service, the first thing we'll look at is the situational, the activities, the specific results. And then, as we go, we start appreciating that it's for Krishna. So we are going to start at that other end anyway. So the idea is that we should be focused on this end, not that end. Because the Brajabasis, that's all the consideration. So all these things just enhance their love for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is we have to see that. Otherwise, we're saying, well, why didn't Krishna work it out different? But he means, we may be looking at it, well, all these calamities are happening constantly, but you can see that many of these pastimes are months apart or a year apart or...
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is now in his the sixth year.
Yeah.
But so many, and you know, now we're on chapter 20. You know, so 19, then there were, you know, different things. But all that stretched over 6 years. So that means in between there is just the standard regular things going. And then there's exceptional things that come up that therefore make the standard things nice. Right? If you eat the standard thing every day, it's not as nice as then occasionally there's something different. And either way, if it's great and it's so different, then you go back to the regular, it's nice, right? Because the other one you ate too much and it took too much time and this and that and you had to go halfway across town and like that. So you're just happy to sit at home and eat your regular stuff. Or it was terrible, and so then your regular stuff is great. You know? So all it is, and that's on the material platform, so it doesn't actually compare to the spiritual, where everything is perfect, and then there's just more perfect, most perfect. It's just always expanding. So,
yeah. We can say that Brajavasis, prema is a natural position for them, and not anxiety. But for us, anxiety is natural, and then we are working towards prema.
For them, prema is natural, anxiety is not. But anxiety, because it's connected to Krishna, is. Because in prema, you have anxiety. Because otherwise, by that, you would say, we'll get rid of anxiety and only have prema. Right? And so therefore, you know, if they work at it, they can get rid of the anxiety and only have prema. See, the point is the anxiety is part of prema.
Yes?
Yes, that's the... It means one may ask, why is there such technical detail on this level when, you know, if we don't get into it, then everybody's much more happy. But we have to remember that this is, you know, the third level of the course. So it has to get into more detail in that than would be in the earlier levels. Yeah? Good one. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued, the earth had been emaciated by the summer heat, but she became fully nourished again when moistened by the god of rain. Thus the earth was like a person whose body has been emaciated by austerities, undergone for a material purpose, but who again becomes fully nourished when he achieves the fruit of those austerities. Right, so you're performing austerities and that one becomes emaciated, right? Or things get less. But then when the fruit of that austerity comes, then one is nourished and everything becomes full again. Right? It's just like when there's a disease or something, then there's that. But then when by taking the medicine, by following the course, then it goes away. Right? Or the person is performing austerities, doing different things, some vratas, and then after that, then the fruit comes. It's very austere, but then you see the nice expansion of everything comes again nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, sometimes when a country is subjugated by an undesirable government, persons and parties undergo severe penances and austerities to get control of the government. And when they gain control, they flourish by giving themselves generous salaries. This temporary profit is like the flourishing of the earth in rainy season, because it's also just during rainy season. And then when rainy season is over, it goes into the cold again, and then everything kind of goes away. The water stays, but the plants go away. And then in the spring, the plants come, but the water goes away. Right? Actually, one should undergo severe austerities and penances only to achieve spiritual happiness, right? Otherwise, it's temporary. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it's recommended that tapasya, or austerity, should be accepted for realizing the Supreme Lord. By accepting austerity and devotional service, one regains his spiritual life, and as soon as one regains his spiritual life, he enjoys unlimited spiritual bliss. But if someone undergoes austerities and penances for some material gain, it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the results are temporary and that they are desired by persons of less intelligence. Right? So, then if that's the case, then what Sukadev Goswami is mentioning, and as much as you mentioned before, being the Paramahamsa Samhita, then it can't be about something mundane. Therefore, we have to look at the principle in relationship to then the Brajabasis, they do everything just to please Krishna. And because they're doing everything to please Krishna, Krishna being pleased, then everything becomes very pleasant and nice. But that's not why they're doing it. They're doing it just to please Krishna. Because if we say, oh, but they're doing it, then they're getting the material benefit or getting the external benefit. And so then it'll be nice, you can sit back and enjoy. That's mixed devotional service. Bhagavatam's about pure devotional service. Therefore, it has to be that they always think in that way to do things nicely for Krishna and go through the effort to do that, or that austerity. And Krishna being pleased, then they're always swimming in an ocean of unlimited ecstatic love. Yeah? Sukadeva Goswami continued. In the evening twilight, during the rainy season, the darkness allowed the glowworms, but not the stars to shine forth, just as in the age of Kali. The predominance of sinful activities allows atheistic doctrines to overshadow the true knowledge of the Vedas. Right? So that would be also the how in Kali do these things come up. So they look to be prominent. So then we're worried about, no, but we should go by what the masses are doing and what they appreciate. But as it mentions here, yes, that's the atheistic doctrines. They become the prominent. So is that actually what we want to do? You know? So the point is if we just want to fit in, then fitting in means, yes, we'll be worshipping the Lord and it reciprocating with the Lord, but the Lord might be in the form of Kalki avatar, so better to interact with Lord Chaitanya, which is about the preaching mission and about going, you know, taking people back to Godhead rather than fitting in, because everybody on earth did fit in when Kalki avatar came, like that. Yes. Yes? So fitting in is overrated. I mean, totally. Right? Because the point is everybody wants to be successful, right? So that means everybody's not successful. And what are they trying to be in that elite class of people who are successful? You understand? So in other words, this idea of fitting in does not make any sense. Because the karmis do not want to just fit in. They want to be unique and special. We're already unique and special, so we don't have to. We're already at the next phase. We just have to keep moving forward into pure devotion. Right. So, yeah? Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, during the rainy season, in the evening, there are many glowworms visible about the tops of trees, hither and thither. And they glitter just like lights. But the luminaries of the sky, the stars and the moon, are not visible. Similarly, in the age of Kali, persons who are atheists or miscreants become very prominently visible, whereas persons who are actually following the Vedic principles for spiritual emancipation are practically obscure. Right? So this is just how Kali works. You say, well, how come we're not the prominent ones? Because, you know, it won't work that way. Right? Before it was, practically everybody in any major area where we were knew who the Hare Krishnas were and could identify them. Right? Because we were doing our activities. So then we were known. Then as we try to fit in and we do the activities of everybody else, so then fitting in, can they tell who's a Hare Krishna? No. And if they see one dressed in robes, do they know who they are? No. But what will be most likely their guess of what a devotee in saffron robes is? Buddhist. A Buddhist, right? So that means the Buddhists are still doing the Buddhist stuff and didn't change. They didn't try to fit in so people can identify Buddhists. But the Hare Krishnas try to fit in, no one knows who they are. Some people have never heard of them. Right? This is a problem. Right? So therefore, it's not our business to fit in, it's our business to please Krishna. That's our business. So we're trying to please Krishna, not the atheist. Because we don't have to worry about the atheist. If you're feeling anxiety that unless we try to fit in, the atheist won't feel good, don't worry. Kali is making his best effort to make the karmis feel good. Right? Because if they feel good, then they continue to do their nonsense, right? Because otherwise, if they're reminded of or become aware of or are attuned to the effects of their sinful activities, they won't feel good. So what will they do? They'll do pious activities. Is Kalki going to like that? No. I mean, Kali going to like that? No. Right? So therefore, he's doing their best to make them feel comfortable. So we don't have to worry about it. In our mood of welfare, we don't have to worry about them trying to feel good. We just try to preach Krishna consciousness because we know that Kalki's making them feel good actually is not any benefit to the soul. But why do I keep saying Kalki? Kali. Kali Raj, right? So Kali Raj is trying to make them feel good and they're happy with it in their illusion, right? So we just focus on trying to please Krishna as Lord Chaitanya has given us, and then in that effort, then we can make things work nicely. Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
The argument of the Western argument of some devotees is that if we make people become feel good, and then they will be more appealing for them to become...
And how is that working out for people? Yeah, it's not working out. Okay, you have two persons, and they have an attraction towards each other. So before they get married, what effort do they make? Right? They always try to make the other person feel good. Right? And what's the purpose of that? That they'll get married. Then once they're married, then do they continue trying to make the other person feel good? No, because the goal was to get married so that you would feel good. So is it working out? And do they try to make others feel good? It's nice, but what are they doing? How are they make by wearing flip-flops, cargo, khaki, or camouflage shorts, and a t-shirt, you know? Then how is that making the karmis feel good? How are they going to be attracted to that? Because anybody in fashion knows that's the stupidest thing you could ever wear. I mean, everybody in fashion says that's the worst thing you could ever wear.
Everybody wears it.
Yeah, because they're not in fashion. That's why, you know, because they're slobs. So are they happy? No, they're never happy. That's the whole point. Kali Yuga is the age of quarrel. They can't even live with each other, let alone with us. So it's a faulty idea. And so it just makes them feel good. I'm the Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. But Krishna is, we're not. You know what I'm saying? People like difference, they like uniqueness. It's just that you have to be cultured in your presentation of it. So if you're rough in your presentation of Krishna consciousness, people won't appreciate that, though they've heard the absolute truth. They will get spiritual benefit. But now if you can present that pleasantly, then also culturally they'll appreciate and they'll come forward. But if we don't present any culture, we're just slobs like everybody else. Right? Like, what is it? You know, like did the song about God being a slob, did that make people more God conscious? No. So therefore, then how is this a bona fide method? Because they're putting the emphasis on making them feel good rather than on giving them Krishna. Because making them feel good is, if you could give them all the six opulences that there is in the universe, then they would say they're going to be happy. But once they get it, they won't be. So there is nothing you can do on the material platform to make them happy. It's impossible. That's already an illusion. That's already a philosophy under the modes of nature. It's already an atheistic philosophy because it's not possible to make people happy. Right? And if it's no, but that moment they're happy, so it's because that moment that you're there and you can enjoy it. So then is it based on their happiness? No, you want to see them happy so that you're happy. So is it actually about the people? You know, I don't think so. It's just about themselves. Because otherwise, why aren't they going out and doing more? No, they just want to fit in. And you can do that. But then you have to respect those who are preaching. Because just fitting in, that's the common thing. And the common person has to respect the Brahmins, has to respect the Vaishnavas, has to respect the preachers. And if they try to make them equal, then they're impersonalist. They're uncultured. That's atheistic. You know what I'm saying? Aluminum is, or stainless steel is common. Gold is not. And now we're going to say they're the same? Anybody can tell there's a difference. Even the people you're trying to fit in with, they can tell the difference between them and their local priest that they do respect, even though he does dress differently and live a totally different lifestyle. In fact, if he lived what they did, they would get upset. You know? And you know what? You want to know what? The interesting part is, one of the places in the world that gets most upset about this is if the priest doesn't live differently and all that, and he lives the same thing, is in Brazil. Because they're so accommodating to anything that they don't have a problem that priests have problems. They're people. And then they get it together and go on. And if the priest starts talking the way they talk, they lose interest. You know what I'm saying? It's a Brazilian thing. And then somehow or another, these Brazilians are going to come up with this stupid philosophy? One should doubt, are they Brazilians? Or maybe they're aliens. Shape-shifting, you know, like that. So maybe they're not actually Brazilians.
They like the mood.
It's accommodating. I can be a, you know. Yeah. You understand? So that's the thing that doesn't make any sense. Like that. Like one devotee was telling me that they came down from America. I think Anuttama and his main guy. There's one devotee who's very expert in dealing with the press when the press gives bad, when there's bad press. And so he was explaining how to deal with this to the leaders there in Brazil. And after explaining everything, then someone says that won't work here, because here people don't have a problem with somebody in a religion having a problem. Says in America they do, because they're anti-authority, but here they all accept authority and accept that. In fact, if you go after one religion, all the other religions will support. They won't allow it. It's just not allowed. So, therefore, the papers don't carry stuff that's anti-religion in anything. It's not that if it's against the Hare Krishnas, the other religions will come out and complain. Because they just see it, it's religion. People have to have religion. So they're actually quite broad-minded, more than Americans. So therefore, this narrow-minded American kind of perspective on how Krishna consciousness gets applied into the international scene is actually only for America. Nobody else thinks like Americans except Americans. And if Americans spend any time outside of America, they tend to think more like the others and appreciate its superior position than how Americans think. You know, I mean, that's on everything except for, let's say, peanut butter sandwiches and waffles and stuff. Those are sacrosanct. But other than that, then. You understand? So that's what doesn't make any sense, is trying to apply something that's not universal and trying to say it is universal when universally no one actually appreciates it. Now, I can do whatever I want without any restrictions. Now that aspect, now everyone will appreciate, because it's based on sense gratification. But they will apply it to their local method. So that you can say is a universal principle. Everybody wants to not be restricted and be able to do whatever you feel like whenever you feel like it. And then at the same time feel I'm very religious. Now that's attractive to everybody. But is that spiritual or is that material? So we have to see is that we're dealing with much more serious things than just whether someone's wearing some pants or not. We're actually dealing with real philosophical issues of understanding, you know, that, like it says here, atheistic doctrines, they're actually based on materialism. They're not actually based on Krishna consciousness. They may be using Krishna consciousness to put a veneer on their materialism, but it's not actually Krishna consciousness. You understand? Because whatever they're talking about, any good preacher is already doing that anyway. And they bring them up to the standard of the tradition. But you start, the guy's in pants, you don't tell him that, well, to have a conversation, then you have to put on a dhoti. We don't do that. right? Some neophytes may, but it's not how preachers work. But you come back after a few years and they're in a dhoti. But here you have a philosophy that they're not in a dhoti and they should stay that way. Even if they want to wear a dhoti, they shouldn't, because it's not our thing. So who's this us? It's not ours, then who are we? If we're Westerners, oh, I'm identifying with the body. Isn't that the first thing that the newest devotee says to someone else when they're preaching Krishna consciousness? We're not the body, we're the soul. And then we're basing a philosophy on opposing the first principle that we preach on. So then, does it actually at all, in any way, shape, or form, get into the spiritual area? Other than you can chant whenever you like, however you like, you know, whenever you like, you know, other than that. You know, and you're not a meat eater. Okay. Because the point is first is the dress and all that, because that's the first thing. But once you get the dress, now, let us say I dress like a karmi, but I'm following the four regulative principles. Is the karmi going to be comfortable with the four regulative principles? Okay, so what's the next thing to go? We want to fit in, we want to make them comfortable, so no four regulative principles. You know, then yes. Christianity has 2 billion people. 2.5 billion people practicing on the planet. But are they actually practicing? No, most of them just say that, you know, what's your denomination? Christian, you know. Why? Because their parents were, and at one point someone was practicing. But actually, there's no lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? There is no Christian food, Christian behavior, Christian lifestyle, Christian anything. You just have to have faith in Jesus. That's it. You don't even have to do any chanting. You know, that's what Catholics do, chanting. Right? Catholics have deities. You know, Catholics, you know, do all that nice stuff for the temple, you know, but, you know, that's not the popular one. So, does that make sense? So therefore, is that, where is it going to go? It means everything has to go. And so, therefore, why does it work? Because there is no lifestyle. They have a philosophy. They're monotheistic, but they have no culture. The culture is just whatever you feel like doing, as long as you don't bother the next person. So whatever the society decides is okay that doesn't bother the next person, then you do that. It's not about standards. It's about whatever anyone feels like. You understand? And it's basically whatever you feel like, but bottom line for ourselves as individuals, it's whatever we can get away with. Does that make sense? So people try to get away with as much as they can, and only if there's authority that can establish it, then you don't. So therefore, as Prabhupada pointed out, we go through all the austerity to get rid of that seemingly imposed governance, so that then we can get all the benefits ourselves, because that's what happens. Right? It's not that was there more bread after Robespierre did his program? You know, you never hear about, yes, now there's this flood of bread and everyone had bread. In fact, some of them were eating cake, you know, so Marie Antoinette was, you know, not too far off. But her head was, but, you know, like that, you know, so. We don't hear about bread. We never hear about bread, because it's not about bread. Bread is just the excuse to have the revolution. Like that. Does that make sense? Famines come and go. They're always happening. So here's just people saw political advantage and they took it. Does that make sense? So it's being said as if it's for the people, but that's what you have to do. Politics means you have to say it's about everyone else because it's coming from Pranamoy. So the more I make it sound like it's for everybody, the more people will buy it. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You know. So yes. So we have to be very, very careful to see that the basis of what we're dealing with here is not based on Krishna consciousness. Now, we as devotees may be doing so many things that aren't Krishna consciousness, but that's not the basis of our position. We know it's because we're materialistically attached, you know, to karma and jnana. That's why we're distracted. So therefore, we want to be able to come to that standard position, and we situate ourselves according to whatever we're able to function at, whatever's comfortable for us. But we understand if it's more materialistic, it's because we're more attached. It's less materialistic because we're less attached, at least to the karma, maybe to the gyan. We're more attached to gyan, so we're able to be more renounced easily, but, you know, like that. You have to see what's the individual. But to make a philosophy that we're from this and we are this, but then you'd have to define what is. If you say, oh, we're Westerners, so what is it? What is a Western lifestyle? You can't say it. All it is I do whatever I want, whenever I want, however I want. That's the Western lifestyle. Because otherwise you say it's a Western lifestyle, but what they eat in the West Coast of America, they don't eat on the East Coast. And in the South, they eat completely different. Oh, we're Americans. We can't take all this spicy. You know, Creole cooking, it's got spices coming out your ears. You know? The whole South, they use chili. You know, and then, you know what I'm saying? So all this is that, no, it's not American. Well, what is American? Right? You know, up in the Northwest, which is nice and pleasant and all that, Californians see that they're nice up there, because in California, people are so nasty that they move up there. And then people up there complain that the quality of life is going down because there's too many Californians. Literally. Look it up on the internet. You know, and they're known to be one of the most liberal of all places. You know, all the liberal things, their what do you call it? Their law there. Abortions, what is it? Euthanasia, you know, marijuana, all these things are legal there. You don't get more liberal than these people, and they don't want Californians. Because they say they reduce the quality of life. So, how are we actually talking universal here? So that's the point. The only universal thing that you can say this is Western is based on whatever sense gratification you can get, however you can get it. And at the same time, because we're talking first world here, you don't disturb anyone else with them knowing. If you can do it and they don't know and they never find out, then that's okay. But if they do find out, then it's a problem, and so then we will back them and say, yeah, you were wrong. But that's only to take the pressure off of us that we're doing things that they don't like either. But if I support them in their complaint against those who they did find out are not dealing with them properly, then that'll take the pressure off of me, and they will think I'm an ally and not bother to look more deeply. So are we actually looking at anything nice? We're looking at the modes of nature here. We're not looking at anything good. So to base philosophies off of this, then it's just like the rainy season. Fireflies look bright in the rainy season. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be very, very careful what we're dealing with here. We deal with it as if it's a game. It's all about whether you're wearing a dhoti or pants. But what about the reality of what do pants signify and what do the dhoti signify? They're taking it's just two different pieces of cloth. Like, you know, do I wear? Well, I can't even give two names of two different brands of jeans. I only know Levi's. Huh? Wrangler. Yes, that's okay. So, you know, it's that. What do we wear? Wrangler? Or do we wear, you know, Levi's? Hmm. Yeah, of course. 501s, right? Yeah, of course. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that, you know, that's not what we're dealing with here. They're taking it that a dhoti is just, you know, some piece of cloth, but it has so much more significance. Right? Like that. The background of it, the history of it, the actual effects that it has, all these different things. So all that's being neglected, simply because it's all down to what I want to do and how I want to do it. And then that is the universal principle on which they do. Because if you go door to door, then each one has a different standard. So there's not a common standard. Right? Because that's why there's not a common standard based on their own particular perspective and what they like. Well, you say, but within Krishna consciousness, you go temple to temple, there's a difference. That's because of the difference of realization of the spiritual. you know, and the leftover contamination of the material. But as you go in time, then you'll see there'll be more of a standard. Is that something? Yeah. So people may say all kinds of things, but it's only to defend their right for doing whatever they like, whenever they like, however they like, and having actually no authority. Their own mind is their authority. That's the basis of this whole philosophy. Does that make sense? There may be some weakness in when people preach that they are to emphasize the externals of Krishna consciousness, and that is a weakness. But at least they're preaching Krishna consciousness. And for those who can handle the principle of authority, then they happily take it. Those who have authority issues, they will have a problem with the externals. Not that, these things are getting in the way of people surrendering. It's the authority issues is getting in the way. Pious people, that's not a problem. They accept authority. Now, if you can present it more pleasantly according to the individuals that you're dealing with, that'll just make it more accessible to them. That's a good preacher. But to say it can't be Vedic, it can't be Indian, it can't have any of those kind of things, that's actually reviling the Vedas. It's considered by Manu a form of intoxication. And that's one of the big five sinful activities. So reviling the Vedas is actually very sinful. So one has to be careful. One has to know what one's dealing with. Right? Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, you're good. Yes?
Offering respect to all and then trying to fit in and try to become the friend of all Vedas may sometimes externally appear to be similar. So is it identity that makes a difference?
Identity makes a difference because you're respecting them for what? If I'm trying to fit in, what am I respecting them for? As my authorities. And if you're seeing all living entities as equal, then who's the authority? Krishna. So it's a matter of Krishna consciousness. So one is, yes, that trying to be nice to everybody, or because some do it through being nice, some do it through being controlling, you know, and that way try to make everything nice. You know, some are the enjoyer and come and enjoy with us. So you can use any of the three or any combination. You know what I'm saying? Because you'll see they're friendly until you push to a particular point. Then it turns into control. And then it breaks down to then they won't enjoy. And then they become completely insecure. And, you know, it just keeps getting weirder and weirder. Does that make sense? So the identity is, am I servant of Krishna or am I servant of the karmis? You know, who's setting the best standard? Does that make sense? Because the common, what's on the street, that's technically not, when we say Western culture, if we're just saying it's Western, that, yes, we could say that. But if we say it's Western culture, we can't say that. Because Western culture generally is coming out of Paris and Milan. You know, a little bit out of London. You know? And then some reflect that in New York. But are you wearing what walks down the catwalk? If you're wearing that, then we can talk culture. But if you're not wearing that, then we can say it's Western. Never say culture. Does that make sense? You know, so it's just, I feel like, why do Americans look like slobs? Because they feel good. Because dressing up, this, that, you have to try, you have to that. They don't want to make the effort. They're too lazy in this area. Right? And so therefore they just feel comfortable in their you know, what do you call it, track suit. You know, that's their whole point. And they'll consider the guys in suits are uptight and, you know, need to relax and, you know. So it's just, yeah. This age, Kali Yuga, is compared to the cloudy season of the living entities. In this age, real knowledge is covered by the influence of the material advancement of civilization. Because that's what we'll quote. They're advancing, they're doing so many nice things, we have to, you know, yukta vairagya and all this stuff. The cheap mental speculators, atheists and manufacturers of so-called religious principles become predominant like the glowworms, whereas persons strictly following the Vedic principles of scriptural injunctions become covered by the clouds of this age. People should learn to take advantage of the actual luminaries of the sky, the sun, moon, and stars, instead of the glowworm's light. Actually, the glowworms cannot give any light in the darkness of night, as clouds sometimes clear, even in the rainy season, and sometimes the moon, stars, and sun become visible. So even in this Kali Yuga, there are sometimes advantages. For example, sometimes Lord Chaitanya's Vedic movement of distributing the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is heard. Notice Prabhupada used specifically Lord Chaitanya's Vedic movement. Because that's where the basis is. It's not in this, what he uses. Material advancement of civilization. You know, what I'm saying? Kali Yuga, cheap mental speculators. Whereas persons who strictly follow the Vedic principles and scriptural injunctions become covered by, they become. So those who are following nicely, then this Kali Yuga covers them. Not that they become covered, that others can't see them or appreciate. Just like the stars and moons and sun are covered by the clouds in the rainy season. But occasionally it opens. So Lord Chaitanya's movement, then, for distributing the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, is heard. People seriously eager to find real light should take advantage of this movement instead of looking towards the light of mental speculators and atheists. So those who are seriously eager, they should take it up. So if you're just eager or not so serious or this, then there's so many that are there. Okay? Does that make sense? So that's the way it is. Now, on the principle that we saw before of the, who was it? The demon that, about finding, the quarreling between religions?
Forest fire one.
The forest, the first forest fire. So then in there is that we're dealing with such individuals that have distracted, you know, they're distracted in their understanding of the Lord Chaitanya's Vedic movement. Then we deal with them pleasantly and nice, and the aspects of Krishna consciousness are involved, we're happy. Right? But if they want to oppose the movement, then we're going to say what things are, how they are. Right? Because you notice, we can go on talking all day without bringing that up. But if an argument is brought up that they will say this, then yes, we have something to say. But otherwise, we don't go out of our way that because that's a problem. No, they do whatever they like. Because if they want to work on a neophyte platform, an attached platform of Sakam Karma Yoga, they can do that. It is progressive above something below that. But if you're going to say that that's equal to pure devotional service, then we'll contest that because it's not. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is we have the mission, we go on with it. And we're not worried what others are doing. But if they're going to distract people, then we'll say, no, that's not the standard that Lord Chaitanya gave. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "The frogs, who had all been lying silent, suddenly began croaking when they heard the rumbling of the rain clouds." But you don't hear so much now because the rain's going down and that, but like when the first rains start, those big, big rains, first thing you hear in the evening, frogs, so many frogs, like millions, like where are all these frogs? You know, but the first heavy rain where there's water sitting, then the frogs all come out and they're making a lot of noise, right? Suddenly began croaking when they heard the rumbling of the rain clouds. In the same way that Brahmin students who perform their morning duties in silence begin reciting their lessons when called by their teacher. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book, "Students are generally supposed to rise early in the morning. They do not usually arise of their own accord. However, but only when there is a bell sounded in the temple or other spiritual institution. By the order of the spiritual master, they immediately rise, and after finishing their morning duties, they sit down to study the Vedas or chant Vedic mantras. Everyone is sleeping in the darkness of Kali Yuga, but when there is a great Acharya, by his calling only, everyone takes to the study of the Vedas to acquire actual knowledge." Right? So then everything's quiet in that dryness of the summer of material existence. But then when the Acharya comes, then he gives that rain of the nectar of Krishna consciousness, of the Vedic knowledge. And then from there, then everybody then starts reciting, right? At that time, then you hear everyone come awake and start speaking something. Otherwise, before, not so much. Sukadeva Goswami continued. With the advent of the rainy season, the insignificant streams which had become dry began to swell and then strayed from their proper courses, like the body, property, and money of a man controlled by the urges of his senses. Right, so it's interesting how they take it, and sometimes they bring out what's the Krishna conscious, sometimes they bring out the material weakness, sometimes they bring out the pious position, you know, by which to then move forward, or how to, the proper attitude of that someone may have. So in all these, then they're doing. But you can see underlying, there is the mentality that the student, he wants to do whatever he wants, but then when the Acharya comes, then they do what they're supposed to do. Right? So like that. And then here's that these insignificant streams, then they take advantage of the things and then they become swelled and then they go off their course and then things get a little weird. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, during the rainy season, many small ponds, lakes, and rivulets become filled with water. Otherwise, the rest of the year, they remain dry. Similarly, materialistic persons are dry, but sometimes when they are in a so-called opulent position, with a home or children or a little bank balance, they appear to be flourishing. But immediately afterwards, they become dry again, like the small rivulets and ponds. The poet Vidyapati said that in the society of friends, family, children, wife, etc., there is certainly some pleasure, but that pleasure is compared to a drop of water in the desert. Everyone is hankering after happiness, just as in the desert, everyone is hankering after water. If in the desert there is a drop of water, it may of course be said that water is there, but the benefit from that drop of water is very insignificant. In our materialistic way of life, which is just like a desert, we are hankering after an ocean of happiness. But in the form of society, friendship, and mundane love, we are getting no more than a drop of water. Our satisfaction is never achieved, as the small rivulets, lakes, and ponds are never filled with water in the dry season, right? They'll go off their course, they'll think that they're very big and powerful, and then the season will be over, and then they go dry again. So that's the thing, is these things can't satisfy the soul. What is it? Society, friendship, and love. They can't. The soul then is the devotional service, so then the devotee taking advantage of those situations to use them in Krishna's service, then that nourishes the soul. That makes things work very nicely. That's why then the proper use of the culture in Krishna's service is what's encouraged. And since it's for Krishna's pleasure, then the Vedic system is the best, because that's the one Krishna uses. Right? The 64 qualities, he follows the Vedas. Right? So, and the Vedas came from him, so that means he made up how he would like to do, that's what he does. Right? And so we can complain, but why is he doing, why isn't it standard, why isn't this and that? Right? But what is the thing that every materialist is striving for, as we discussed before? Doing what you like, when you like, how you like, however much you like. That's Krishna. So we're trying to do that. So we can't base a philosophy on the opposition to Krishna. That means that's atheistic, rather than in line with Krishna. And since Krishna likes to do things in a Vedic way, as close as possible we get. The situation doesn't allow it, we don't. But if it does, we do. You know what I'm saying? And it's according to the standard given by the Acharyas, not our perspective. Because otherwise, our perspective will never find the right situation. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Yes.
It seems that the difficulty is that the example with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's preaching to mostly Uttama Adhikaris and Madhyamas. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada, they preach mostly to the Kanishthas, or just, you know, regular people, and then bring them up. So the interest is very different between those groups. So then, it's it's obvious, and some preachers will concentrate on this and like that. So we see the main focus is still on the Kanishthas.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
So the example from Mahaprabhu's time, it's not...
But the point is if you're talking about, let's say you have a whole group of people, but what's going to be interesting about this group of people is going to be those who are prominent and have more special qualities, or how they respond, you know, like I say in this way, as students.
Yeah.
In other words, we want to hear about the better student, not about the ordinary guy.
Yeah.
You know, if I tell you a story, there's this guy, you know, he went to school and, you know, as he went there, he dropped his lunch bag and then he picked it up and he noticed the banana become a little smushed and some of the peanut butter and jelly was kind of falling out of the sandwich, but what could he do? And it also, you could see it on the bag, kind of the thing. So he kind of turned the bag around so that no one would notice it. And he went to his locker and, you know, he tried to, you know, open the locker, but, you know, because he spaced out at the moment, he had to do it two or three times before he actually got it right. And then he put the stuff in his locker. Half the stuff fell out and all that. And other kids across the hall laughed at him, you know, like that, because the guy's such a slob. So then he finally got all the things in there. The bell rang and he still couldn't close the locker. So then he was slightly a bit late. Then when he came in, everyone's look at him, especially the teacher. Shall I go on? Is that the story we want to hear?
I just want to make a side comment. This is the most popular story right now. That's a story of the wimpy kid.
The wimpy kid?
Yeah, this is like super popular. Every kid now is reading. Exactly how you said.
About the wimpy kid, yeah.
And he has many volumes.
Okay.
It's not one book.
Yeah, but it's still just one kid.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
why?
It's
because
it's
he is.
His family.
Yeah, but in here is the book called Wimpy Kid?
Diary
of the Wimpy Kid.
Yes. Okay. Diary. So then in this, but he's one guy. So we pick out one guy. So now, if we look at it about what is the goal. So what is it here? The wimpy kid. We can relate because we're a wimpy kid.
Yeah.
Right. But if we want to get somewhere, then who do we focus on? The people who are successful.
The writer.
The writer of the wimpy kid, yes. So now is there, how you say, you know, gone into their, you know, seventh movie deal and they're, you know, sitting there next to, what is it, J.K. Rowling, you know, and like that is billionaires now, then, yeah. So, then I say yes. So therefore, it's not that there's not tens of thousands of neophyte devotees. It's just that in the past times we just hear about the Goswamis, right? And now, but that doesn't mean it's for them. All those other people came up from as neophytes and went on through. But it's just that their example of how it's being done is the best. So you see how each one of those acharyas, how they started off. Now, would you say Rupa and Sanatan, were they professionals? Were they career-oriented? You know, were they good at what they were doing? They were successful. They had prestige. They had money. You know, all the things that were there. So then, from that, then they took up Krishna consciousness. And then didn't have so much, and this and that, they weren't worried, and then like this, then they moved through. So we can say but that's so extreme. I couldn't live at that kind of poverty, but we didn't have that kind of wealth. So in other words, someone with that kind of wealth can live at that kind of poverty. But we came from just a little bit of wealth, so we can live at a little bit of poverty. It connects. Like someone was telling me about a book distributor. I think right now he's the top in the world, or at least at the time he was the top in the world. And but he was from a very successful background. But he came attracted to Krishna consciousness. Says, well, why don't you just, you know, move into the temple and you know, be a brahmacharya and practice for, you know, some time, a few years. And then after that, you can decide you like it or not. And if not, go back to whatever you're doing. He says it wouldn't be possible. He says, because then what I'm doing, if you're out for just you know, I can't remember if he said weeks or months, you're out of the loop. You can't get back in. So it's a matter of he either continues and is very, very successful what he was doing, you know, it's some kind of internet thing, or you go into something else. And you know, and so then he decided to do Krishna consciousness. So then he went into that, and then he became the best book distributor in the world, you know, above like the Bombay guys and our guys who, you know, they distribute thousands, you know. And so it's just a matter of it can go. So when they do it, that's just great. So therefore, their example is the best. Ours will be, you know, a little bit less. Does that make sense? And most likely it won't be as funny as the wimpy kid. Right? The point is if the whole thing was all just sad and terrible and this and that, no one would be reading it. It's probably because it's funny as anything. You know? It's taking all the cliches and then, you know, joking on it. So then, you know, putting it in a light way, so then that happens to me, then you don't feel so bad about it. So in that way, then it's nice. So then you're showing how many wimpy kids are actually able to see it in a funny light. You know, or it's bringing out in a funny light. Not so many. So therefore, what is that? That means it's that person, as Mati said, the writer. And that means he's actually quite unique amongst common people. Does that make sense? Yeah. So someone who something bad can happen and they laugh it off, or you know, they do something embarrassing and they can move through it, and that people respect that. So it's actually a special position. Because not many people can do it. Someone once was telling me that he had seen this video where they set up something. They did something to the ground in a public place, like in an airport. They polished it. They did something so that when you walked on it, your shoe, because you know the people would be there would be wearing, you know, generally shoes, that the rubber would squeak, and when it would squeak, it would sound like you passed air. And so they just set up the camera and watched, and depending upon where the people were from, how they responded. And they said when the British person walked there and it squeaked, and it like that, he's so embarrassed, and he can't be embarrassed in front of people socially. So he would try to figure out what it was, and when he figured out it was just how you hit the floor just when you're walking, he would do it many times in an obvious way so people could understand he didn't pass air. It was a shoe. And then, you know, different groups, when they go along and that would happen, they would just all laugh and then just keep walking. And someone would become so embarrassed and then keep walking and like that. So, yeah, so if you can just, you know, see it in that fun, like, then people like persons like that. Things, they're how you say? Generally, they would be a schlemiel, right? Schlemazels no one likes, right? But, you know, occasional schlemazel, but, you know, because... So, therefore, then, you know the difference between schlemiel and schlemazel? No. Isn't this common knowledge? Okay. We'll try to give it a more generic context, okay? Somebody is... There's a guy, he's bringing the doll to serve the doll, okay? And while he's walking, he trips, and the doll goes flying. He's a schlemiel, right? You understand? Now, the guy the doll lands on, he's the schlemazel. Okay? Yeah? Yes, I like that. Yeah, so we have to see. It's funny. That's what the common things, you bring it into a funny thing. That's what entertainers do, especially the guys who are joking and that, or, you know, stand-up comedians, that's what they're expert at. So it is a very attractive thing if you can put it into a pleasant light, so then you can feel better and stuff like that. Does that make sense? But the point is the prominent person is the one you want to bring out. So in here, the things that happen probably to this, what do you call it? Wimpy kid? It's probably more than anyone else. Probably what happens to everybody in the school individually happens to him, you know, in the same day. So therefore, he is the outstanding wimpy. In other words, the whole school is full of wimpy kids, but he's like the king of wimpy kids, you know. So that's why we want to hear his story. Does that make sense? You know. So like that. It's like a does that make sense? Like. So therefore, there isn't actually any difference. Because the goal is the same, everything's the same. It's just that you're showing the example so that you can be inspired and move forward. Because the most important is the mood that they have. Like Rupa Goswami, it's not that, oh, he's such a great Sanskrit scholar, that's why he could write that verse, and then Lord Chaitanya was impressed with it. No, it's because he caught the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So that we can strive for. Like that. Sanatana Goswami, that he, in trying to go to the temple, then, you know, that he was supposed to go at a certain time, so therefore then all the pandas would be moving on the road, and himself, considering he was you know, an outcast, therefore went by the back road on the beach, so it was hot, so he got blisters on his feet. So that kind of austerity. But the mood that I am not in a superior position, so therefore I will move through the environment of Krishna consciousness in such a way to not disturb others. That we can take from it. Like that. Doesn't mean now we go walking down on the beach and all that. And then there's a problem here, because much of the time the Ganga doesn't have beaches where there's sand and that, a lot of mud, so we can't actually practice what he had there. And so therefore then we go to Puri, but then, you know, Puri and this and that I can't relate to. But now Laguna Beach, now that I can relate to. And so therefore now we'll do that in pursuance of following Lord, you know, Sanatana Goswami. I'm moving to Laguna Beach. Yeah, that's not exactly how we're supposed to take it. You understand? So you can take the principle, even though they may do it in an accelerated fashion or a much more greater fashion, but the principle is something that is universal that everyone can follow. That's why it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's why it's in Bhagavatam. That's why it's in Gita. It's that which is universally applicable. That's what's given. Is that okay? Yeah. So if we do that, then it becomes inspiring hearing those stories.
Yeah, it is inspiring. It's not. It's just. It's a lot of distance between where we are and what happens in there.
Yeah, but Lord Chaitanya, some of the people who he was preaching to, various Buddhists, atheists, you know, or dealing with the Upasampradayas or different things, so they're also quite extreme. So, yeah. So we can take that example. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.